Hello, everybody. This is Terry Laundrie. Welcome to the T3 Observations for January 2 of 2011. Best wishes for the new year. We're going to depart from the usual schedule here because I have one chart, which is an important chart, and I'm going to spend all of the presentation today on discussing its various concepts, which are shown graphically in the middle of the chart. And we'll discuss some of the consequences in the next two parts, and then we have not had a chance to put this into the data sheet down below, and so I'll talk about the data, how that's coming, and how you can fill that in if you need to take a look at the volume oscillator data. And first thing we're going to talk about is that you notice the chart is very long, and you need to get a bigger perspective, and you have to get the five concepts which are shown in the chart here all lined up in order to find out basically what these indicators do is they find market lows for you. So let's take a look at the basic flow of the concepts in the middle of the chart. In the early part there, you've got a case things called envelopes, red, green, red, black, green channels. And you have a red arrow that points to the green lower band, and then above that you see a black line running through the chart, and then you see at the top the red line, which marks the containment of the envelopes. I discovered this process in the basically in the 2000 type era, because when you're trying to find do market timing, you have two choices. You want to try to find the market prices turning points by looking at price, or do you want to look at time? The cycles that you see along here going number one, number two, number three, that's just a pure time dimension. The envelopes is the pure price dimension. And it's, as I have reported, and it's in the archives, what you do is you look at the energy in the market fluctuations, which is the S&P 500, shown as the high and the lows here, as they move around the 55-day moving average, which is the black line, and you calculate that energy, and then the bands are just if all of that energy went into an excursion away from the 55-day moving average to the upside, you'd get the red line, and if all of that energy was to be pushed into a downside excursion, you'd be at the green line. That means essentially that the market cannot get out of these channels. And if you look at it from the March low here, which we can now see because the chart's been elongated, you can see that coming up to the top, it gets rebuffed at the top of the channel, which is the red line. And sometimes, if it wants to keep going up, it just rides it up. Then when it came down and we had the correction in the summertime here, you see that it tends to pop through on the bottom side. Then it stabilized, and then it turns up it ran. Hugged the top going up between cycles 6 and 7. It came back to the black line, and so far it's hugging the red line, which I believe is going to be the case. And then at some point it's going to turn down, and it's going to come down to the next cycle low, which we believe would be in the early March time period. If you do a statistical analysis on this, what you find out is that the market really never gets outside of the bands. In other words, the timing that the strategies that you can implement are basically within that channel. You'll notice that it goes out of the channel during the summer times. You can go out of the channel in the time periods where you're having very sharp declines, because basically bottoms are V-shaped and tops are broad shaped. So the question you got there is that can you poke it on there? But as you can see, you know, every time you can poke it underneath there, it rallies back again. So that is information in that period. You almost never get a breakout above the top of the green line. I mean, red line, because tops tend to be broad and it's tends to get mushy up there. But a lot of the progress that you get in a bull market takes place up at that time period. So, you know, it's toppy, but it's going up. Now let's move on to the second concept, which is cash buildup, and that's represented by the green, rather dark, wide line. And you can see, you can see that the cash buildup phases I've drawn in here. You get the momentum peak in the early March 09 time period, and you get a downtrend line. When that's cut, that's the end of the cash buildup phase. Then you have another one that's a little bit shallower going into October. And then you have a slightly diminishing top pattern, then a fall down into February of 10. During the severe correction, you have a sort of a normal one that looks, like a simple trend line. And then for short T number one and short T number two, you have a sort of a flat top, descending tops, but shallow, and then it's a steep going down, and the same for short range T number two. The important thing that, particularly if you're new to T theory, is that some people actually believe that what happens is the market gets good news and it runs up, and then it gets tired. And then when it gets tired, it has a correction. But in T theory, it's assumed that you have to have the cash buildup phase, which is a buildup of buying power on the sidelines before you start the rally. In other words, it doesn't borrow the money and then have the rally and then have to find out where it's going to get it from. It's actually a cash basis concept where you first get the cash buildup on the sidelines, and then that becomes the fuel for the rally. T theory has to do with the symmetry of that cash buildup phase, but basically you can prove that you cannot make a new cash buildup. If you don't have a cash buildup phase, you're not going to get a rally. So it's important to find that. Now, if you want to look at the cash buildup phase, you see for short range T number two, and one and two, is actually there's one big cash buildup phase that goes from June, from the June top in the oscillator, and actually goes across to the September peak in a descending motion, then goes down to T. That's called intermediate T number three. So there's some very large T in here, which is important, and it's got to be important because the cash buildup phase is long. At least that's the assumption that we're going to make in T theories, that if you see a big cash buildup phase, it has to be something. Now, this was not part of the forecast that we have in the advanced decline T's, because you would have basically have run out the time on that time frame. What the explanation is going to have to be, it's either the quantitative easing or something else. But the short-range T's will pick up where you're going to go, and that intermediate T goes out into the, it's been calculated as the first couple of days in May, but it is, I would just probably call it that, it was the end of April. And so that there's something going on in that aspect. However, you can just refine it with the short-range T number two, and short-range T number two goes out with the top in February, okay? The third concept is the T-theory accumulation low, and accumulation is defined as a divergence between the S&P price and the volume oscillator, in which the volume oscillator is rising, shown by these lime green arrows with an open arrow on the open arrowhead, and you see that these occur at points which are the cycle lows, numbered from 1 through 7. Basically, you have two concepts to find market lows by virtue of the indicators. One of them is the repetition that the cyclical lows are roughly in some sort of a rhythmic sequence, followed by the fact that you have a cash buildup phase getting into the low, because you presumably the definition of a low is that you're going to come out of it with a rally, so you have to have the cash buildup phase, and then down at the bottom you should see an accumulation pattern. All these things that I state to you are like that. They're very reliable, but every once in a while you don't get an accumulation pattern, and so you get thrown off the track. So you have to look at the totality of all the concepts, which is why the chart has to be long and has to have so many indicators in it. But so far we have an accumulation pattern. Presumably we will find another accumulation pattern at the next cycle low, which is number 8 in early May. There is an interesting concept of a descending tops pattern, which you can see in the volume oscillator already, which is presumably, it's for the last couple of weeks. You'll notice that in the volume oscillator, I put little dots. Those dots are closing days, so you can count the days going down. But you see there's quite a few days going down from a peak in the oscillator in the right side of short range 2 going back to the zero line. That's a new cash buildup phase, okay? And it's going to take a run someplace. And you'll notice that the S&P 500 is under the red channel, and it's backed off. That is potential to pop the market back up into the red channel again and force it up there to continue the uptrend. you can get really interested in some of these concepts, and you'll find out that they telegraph their motion. However, this is not going to become an accumulation pattern, because it is an oscillator decline, so it is a cash buildup phase. However, it doesn't really have a divergence, at least it's not apparent here. Okay, you would have to have weakness in the market. I would doubt that's going to occur here, because you're already rising in the T, and the S&P should rise in this T very much like it did coming out of 6, or coming out of cycle low 4 or 3 or 2, but not as vigorous as number 1 or 2, because it's early stages of a bull market. It's strong and it tends to get a little bit quieter. The next concept is the cyclical low, and William told me he has been following this for his whole career, and so presumably it varies, but if you're very careful to go through, look at all these cash buildup phases and where they end, and look at how the S&P dips, you should be able to find them, and then you can make an estimate of what the variation is between cycles, so that when you're looking for number 8 here in the future, you'll look at the variations in this, and you'll be able to come up with a plus or minus time scale for this. Now, the main project that we're doing on program development is able to embed fix out where the dates are of these, and put them into the program that we're writing. And it's taken about a year to develop this program, and then be able to quantitatively put the number of trading days or calendar days between 2 and 3, 3 and 4, and so forth, so that you could be able to make a statistical estimate as to where the next low is. The accumulation patterns have to be put in other words, exactly where they were located. They have to be located. The length of the cash buildup phase has to be determined, and then the program will be able to be able to tell you what's the average cash buildup phase. You can see, look at the green cash buildup phases, you can see that the total duration from the peak in the oscillator down to where you're going to end up with a new T is approximately the same. And that means that the cycles are approximately the same. And the cash buildup phases, the accumulation patterns do show up all the time. Well, sometimes one of these things won't turn out to be correct. I mean, it will have a lapse, but you can figure it out eventually. The last concept we have is the midpoint between cycle lows, and this has to do with the elementary form of a cycle. If it was going sideways, is that you would have a peak in prices about halfway through, but it could come earlier or it could come later. Notice that the interesting thing about the thing is, if you go back and look at coming out of cycle number 1, I have an M that's marked, which is approximately the midpoint between the low 1 and low 2. And you'll see that the actual peak occurs after the midpoint. Okay, but it occurs fast enough to have a couple weeks to go down to the next cycle low. If you come up and look at the rally in from cycle low number 2, you see that again it's getting kind of high near the midpoint, but it still produces one more rally to get you further get the final peak for that particular rally into the a top date, which is later than the midpoint, and then it falls into a very short time period into T3, and then when you come out of 3, you go past the midpoint, and it's still pretty good, and then when you get to the past the midpoint by quite a bit, it still leaves enough time to drop into the cycle low. The same is true coming out of cycle 4. The actual peak is to the right of the midpoint, and you can see even in the decline that we've had, that between 5 and 6, the midpoint is still not it finally makes a rally, but the peak above the black, just above the black line, but not up to the red line, does occur after the midpoint, and it's approximately in the same relative position as these others. In the case coming out of 6, you see your peak is after the midpoint, and you have a couple down a couple of weeks, and we would like to think that the market is going to go up into the do a pretty good job of going past the midpoint here, and so forth, and then they make a top and then pull into number 4, assuming the pattern is going to be somewhat it's going to look something like that with some variation which we don't know about. So that's the way you would do that particular forecast. The reason that we were interested in the midpoints, of course, is because in money flow teas, you don't pick up a forecast until you get a momentum peak in the money flow indicator. And we'll talk about that. I probably won't get into that in real detail until we get into February, because I have to do all the money flow teas and crank them through here and get them to go embedded in the program. Then I have to do all the regular teas, which would like the short range T to one, and I have to embed them into the program so that they're all drawn automatically, and then see what the kind of errors that you get out of that. But so it takes time to build this thing out. So that's the way you would kind of come at the forecast using these five indicators. And what you're really looking at is the totality of the five different concepts. And the question is can you come up with a composite picture where like three out of the four should be right, and maybe the other one is a little bit, but each one is capable of making a slight correction to either the long range picture or the short range picture, and so that they're all helpful to know, and you just have to organize them on a long sheet like this in order to be able to sort of see the logic of the individual ideas. One thing I didn't mention, and I think I probably didn't mention here, was that in there's two things about the channels. One is that all activity is contained within the channel. That's the case, for example, if you wonder, you know, could the Dow go up another 200? Could the S&P go up another 200 points because the channel is pointed up? Well, probably not today, right? Because every time if you take this descending oscillator pattern and is a small cash build of it, you can send it up to the top, but it's not likely that it's going to blow you out through the red upper line, because it's never done it in here, and it rarely ever does it unless it was some kind of a special news announcement. And if it did blast it above, it would be knocked back down again based on the past behavior. The only way you can get a large increase is to take the intermediate T and try to force it up in a gradual uptrend. And so you have to be patient on any kind of a projection that you're going to, if you believe that the market's going to go up, you still have to go through this rigmarole of trying to get it to go through the channels this way, because it's trapped in the channel. The other thing that I was remiss at T7 low, at the cycle low 7, is it is true, or almost always true, that all important lows must occur in the vicinity of the black mid-channel point, or down at the green line, which is an oversold condition. Okay, I was thinking it was going to go down to the oversold condition, but the theory of channels just says that they're quantized. It can be either one. It's like you can flip a coin. Head, you only go down to the black line for a correction, and tails, you go down to the green line, and it has some sort of a random motion. It's not likely in the early stages of a bull market, but it gets more and more likely as you go along here. So that's just an overview. There's a lot of information in this chart, which you have to think on, and you can study it over. And of course, we're going to be building on top of it. Once we start getting the T's, and the thing's going to get like really, really, really complicated. And maybe sometimes I will dispense with the T's, because if you're in the early formation of a new T, you really don't want to know about T's, because you're waiting for round to form the T. So you get rid of those, and you just look at the cycles and the channels and the midpoint and how the last T finished and what the projection is going to be for the next cycle low in time, and try and zero it on that way. But once you made the low, then you're more interested in what the short range T's are, and eventually you want to know what the money flow T's are, and so they will appear, and some of these other things can be taken off the chart, and that's what we're working on. Okay, that's the conclusion of part one, which is the introduction for a new chart for the new year, and I think you're going to find this is very interesting. And then we'll be back in part two, where we're going to talk about some other discoveries made along with this.